The Laura Murphy Show, Episode 14.
Welcome to The Laura Murphy Show, the podcast that analyzes financial markets from the perspective of Austrian economics and Nelson Nash's infinite banking concept. Listen and learn as your hosts, Robert Murphy and Carlos Lara, explain how you can be part of building the 10%.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 14 of The Laura Murphy Show. With me, as always, is Carlos Lara. How are you, Carlos?
I'm good, Bob.
And just in case you folks forgot, I'm Bob Murphy, of course. So for this episode, we're going to be talking about the ruling that has been issued by the Department of Labor. Now, Carlos is the resident expert on this particular matter. We detailed this, or he detailed it, I should say, in his April 2016 article in the Laura Murphy Report. If you're not familiar with that, I encourage you, especially if you're a fan of this podcast, you're going to love the Laura Murphy Report. There's plenty of free issues for you to peruse if you go to lauramurphy.com and look. There's the Laura Murphy Report section, but also just go to the resources and you can see some other sample issues if you want to get an idea of what the Laura Murphy Report's all about. So for this one, though, we thought this is such an important ruling and it affects the financial industry and it just typifies how much the people in Washington are trying to steer money and power into the hands of their buddies on Wall Street. And we know we have a lot of financial professionals listening to this podcast. So in case you're not a subscriber to the LMR, we figure, you know what, we're going to give back to the community. This is so important. We got to give it away, this particular information. And so that's why I thought we should cover this topic. So Carlos, why don't you set the table, if you will, make sure people understand the context for what we're going to be telling them about in this episode.
So yes, if you're a financial professional, I know that a lot of our listeners are financial professionals, you're very familiar with this ruling that just came out officially April the 6th. Now, it's been being talked about now for the good part of 7 years, and a lot of financial professionals out there have been, you know, wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth, you know, wondering what this thing was going to be. So it's out now. The full compliance for it actually begins 1 year from now, April of 2017. And then there are some exemptions to the rule. And these exemptions are sort of going to be, you know, phased in from 2017 until January 2018. So what is this thing? Well, the best way I know how to describe it is very similar in one way to the Dodd-Frank Act in that it purports to concern itself with investor protection. I mean, that's what I read from it. It also came on the heels of the 2008 financial crisis. And there's just been, you know, hundreds of meetings, and there's been interested stakeholders and, you know, consumer groups, plan sponsors, financial services companies, academics. I mean, everybody seems to have gotten into the act in helping to, you know, finalize the framework for this ruling. What it concerns itself with is the area of tax-preferred retirement savings. I mean, this is what we're talking about, and the main objective is to specifically address the problems with fiduciaries.
Hey, Carlos, let me just stop you for a minute, because to us, this is all inside baseball and old hat, but just in case we have some people who are brand new, what do you mean by, when you talk about tax-preferred retirement vehicle, like what do you mean exactly?
Okay, what we have to realize is that you take 50, 60 years ago, as we've said in previous podcasts, the way people used to save their money really was in whole life insurance or they would just save it in a savings account at a commercial bank, or they would buy bonds. That was typically the way people saved for retirement. But then, of course, you know, when the stock market came in vogue, and we have people now speculating, and we've had a lot of inflation since we came off the gold standard and all these kinds of things. Well, this whole retirement savings arena, you know, has changed a lot over the last, you know, 40 years. But what was going on prior to 4 years is that you had pension programs for employees, like government employees, you know, at the federal, state, local levels. They have retirement pensions that you know, the government sets aside for them. Corporations used to do the same thing. They would set up these pension programs for their employees. So it was sort of a trust fund. Corporations, when they ran into a little bit of a cash flow problem, would dip into these trust funds and replace it with an IOU. And pretty soon there was a lot of IOUs instead of actual trust money there. And then if the corporation went bankrupt, well, there went the employee's retirement plan. So in 1974, Congress enacted what is known as the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or for short, ERISA. And this particular law was to protect these, and of course, their tax-preferred retirement savings, tax-preferred or tax-deferred retirement savings for employees. And it all came under the auspices of the U.S. Department of Labor. Now, to be specific on what this covered, it covered government pension funds and the private sector defined benefit plans, the defined contribution plans, what we know as the participant-directed 401ks, and then when the individual retirement account came in, it also covered, you know, that particular arena. Okay, so these are the retirement programs, the different kinds of retirement programs that are out there in those particular different sectors. And so when we're talking about what is it specifically, it is these tax preferred retirement programs. And of course, the reason financial professionals are so concerned about that is because here is the Department of Labor saying, who really is an investment fiduciary here when you're talking to the general public or anybody having to do with these retirement plans? We know what ERISA described as a fiduciary, but we have a situation now where we've got a lot of financial professionals out there who may be registered representatives. They may be insurance agents. They may be, you know, registered advisors, who are setting themselves out to be financial planning experts, who are now also advising people on these particular retirement programs. And the Department of Labor is basically saying those particular retirement programs that fall under ERISA, they actually have what we refer to as a fiduciary. So they're so-called ERISA protected plans.
Let me just stop you there for a second, Carlos, because again, this is really important stuff, folks, but I want to make sure, especially if you're a financial professional, I want to make sure we're not losing the average listener. So that term fiduciary, I just looked it up on Google. So the legal dictionary defines it this way. It says, a fiduciary duty is a legal duty to act solely in another party's interests. Parties owing this duty are called fiduciaries. The individuals to whom they owe a duty are called principals. Fiduciaries may not profit from their relationship with their principals unless they have the principals' express informed consent. Okay, so if you're acting as somebody's fiduciary in this context, it means you are supposed to be subordinating your own interests entirely to this person's, the principal, you know, on whose behalf you're working. And the only, and you're not supposed to, you as the fiduciary are not supposed to personally profit from those dealings or advice or whatever you do for the principal unless, you know, they know up front exactly what's going on and they're fully aware of the fact that, you know, the advice you may be rendering also benefits you indirectly perhaps. And so the Department of Labor's ruling is saying any financial, obviously, Carlos, stop me if I say something inaccurate, but my understanding of what your article is saying, the Department of Labor has now clarified and said financial professionals who are working with people and giving them advice regarding their, what we would think of as tax-qualified retirement plans, things like your 401k or if you're a teacher, a 403b, stuff like that, where, oh, I have my retirement in this special account over here where it grows in a tax-deferred environment, and that's so much more advantageous to me, and that, you know, that's what all the gurus tell me to do with my money. So someone who's talking to you about what you should do with those things, that person now is a fiduciary who owes you a duty to not profit from that unless you, as the client, the principal, are fully informed of the nature by which that advice helps the person giving you the advice. And so this is a step up compared to what the previous regulatory environment was. Is that basically right, what I just said, Carlos?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In one sense, a fiduciary is a relationship more or less like what you see with a trustee and a beneficiary. You know, it's at its base definition. And what this new ruling is now doing, that it's actually pinpointing who exactly is a fiduciary investment advisor. You know, that's what they're wanting to do. It's all keyed in on that definition of fiduciary. And so the law, in a sense, is sweeping and far-reaching in that the majority of financial professionals, you know, more often than not, either directly or indirectly, are catering to this retirement savings industry, you know, in some way or another. So with the passing of this fiduciary definition now, the department now is going to be given the authority to scrutinize the actual communications that our advisors are having with individuals or entities that are any way connected to these tax-preferred retirement savings in this arena. This is what they're really focusing on. And they're keying in on how these individuals are getting paid. You know, they're targeting their method of payment, you know, commissions, fees, that sort of thing. So obviously all financial professionals have been worried about this. The actual lettering of the ruling is stating that the Department of Labor has gathered facts that say that there's a lot of harm being done by losses of billions of dollars a year for retirement investors, you know, in the form of eroded plans and in particular, the results of our individual retirement accounts. They're saying that it's in the area of the rollovers into these individual retirement accounts. In other words, from ERISA-protected plans into the individual retirement account.
So let me stop you right there, Carlos, because for example, somebody's working at a company for a few years, and part of the compensation package was to say, hey, we're going to contribute to this 401k. Maybe there's an employer match or whatever, and they're taking money out of the employee's paycheck, going into this company-tailored 401k. Then, whatever, 5 years down the road, that employee looks around and takes a job from another firm and moves. Now, loosely speaking, it's like the old 401k was in the auspices of that old employer, and so the employee might say, you know what, I want to make that portable. I want to take it with me. He goes and meets with his personal financial advisor, who has nothing to do with the old company, and that guy says, hey, you know, rather than leaving your funds over there, I mean, you're leaving that company. Why don't you just put it into an IRA, and you can control your, you know, you can manage your own accounts. You know, take control of your retirement savings, roll it over into this thing. You know, it's still got a lot of the tax advantages and whatever. It's just a different environment, a different kind of vehicle. And a guy says, sure, okay. And maybe what he doesn't fully realize is that the guy giving him that advice stands to gain from that, that it perhaps is not purely disinterested altruism that he might personally benefit. I mean, it very well may be correct advice, but the point is the person hearing it and acting on it might not have been fully aware of how it benefits the guy telling him, and perhaps had he known that, he might have been a little bit more analytical and about it. Is that the basic story?
Yes, it's in the, yeah, and so it's in that rollover. That this is where the, you know, the rule is pinpointing the problem is. So Dole is emphasizing that there are few restrictions on investment choices in the individual retirement account. Okay, like you find under these ERISA, you know, protected plans. Okay, so the individuals that are trying to manage their own individual retirement accounts, you know, are looking to a financial advisor to help, you know, make the right selection of the right product. Okay, and so Dole is saying these advisors who they're going to, you know, they may be stockbrokers, they may be insurance agents, they may be registered investment advisors, or financial professionals of that type that are holding themselves out to be financial planning experts. But Dole is saying these advisors, they're subject to a different legal standard than the fiduciary under these ERISA plans, and they're not really required to act in the customer's best interest. This is what they're targeting. In other words, the ERISA-protected plans have a fiduciary who is responsible for making sure the investment alternatives, you know, are prudent, but there's no such responsible fiduciary in the individual retirement context. That's where the rub is. Okay, so what the Dole ruling is trying to do is to now say that these individuals who are doing that, now they have to be treated as fiduciaries, and they're making fiduciary recommendations, and these individuals need to be held accountable. Okay, that in essence is the where the real essence of the ruling is.
Okay, there's two things here. So let's first focus on the implications this will have, or the effect this will have. So I know I'm going to anticipate, because I know I read your article, that a lot of, since the thing's not going to kick in for a year, a lot of firms are sort of just studying it and kind of waiting and seeing what are other people doing before they give it guidance to their own financial professionals who fall under the umbrella of their operations, as to say, what do you do? Do you need to alter the way you're interacting with clients? But is it fair to say this kind of has a very chilling effect? Because right now people are like, holy cow, the way we do business, is the Department of Labor now saying that's illegal?
Yeah, but there's no accountability there. But Bob, the way I look at this, and there's a lot of folks that may disagree with me, but it can't be just about these rollovers, you know. It really can't be. Now, one of the things that we have to realize here is that over the last 40 years, since these retirement programs have been growing, I mean, we're looking now at $25 trillion in these preferred tax programs. That's a huge amount of savings for the American public, okay? So each one of the divisions that I've talked about that's under the ERISA plan that's overseen by the Department of Labor. I mean, they have trillions of dollars in each one of these segments, okay? To give you an example, the defined contribution assets total $6.8 trillion, of which $4.7 trillion is 401ks, okay? And 56% of those 401ks are plans that are managed by mutual funds, all right? So you take any one of these individual sectors, and there's mutual funds that are put into these plans, okay? It just so happened that the largest, you know, section of these plans happens to be the IRA, the individual retirement account. It's $7.6 trillion. So it's the largest one. And $3 trillion, or 45% of it, is in mutual funds. Okay, now you can put other types of things in there. You can put land, real estate. There's a lot of annuities that are sold for those individual retirement accounts. So my point is that we're talking about a huge sector of the economy. And it's these individual retirement accounts, which represent, you know, the largest part, have a lot of financial professionals that Dole is saying now need to be, you know, known as fiduciaries. Okay, that's where the real key is, because they're targeting the rollovers going out of these ERISA plans that have a qualified fiduciary into these individual retirement accounts, where there is no, you know, expert fiduciary, so to speak, you know, governing that arena. So now they're going to be called fiduciaries. Okay, that's where the whole rub is. But you've read reports. I know you have. You've listened to stories. You maybe even experienced it yourself, that it can't just be that rollover situation. It just can't be that. A lot of times these mutual funds themselves erode these plans. You know, everybody knows that you can have excessive fees and transaction fees in these mutual funds, and not to mention market volatility. So a lot of erosion on these plans that Dole is focusing on is just really coming from, you know, some bad mutual funds. It's not so much that it's in that rollover area, is the way I'm seeing it, but this is they seem to be picking on that area specifically.
Okay, so, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, the actual mechanics of the ruling and how that is going to affect, perhaps make a lot of the existing financial professionals think twice and perhaps reevaluate the way they interact with clients. And I think we should come back to that at the end of this episode to make sure we're giving guidance to especially any financial practitioners who have gone through our own training program with the Nelson Nash Institute and the IBC Practitioners Program. But why don't we just take a few minutes? I mean, Carlos, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of the U.S. government, and I don't think they are a fount of wisdom and truth necessarily. So I'm very skeptical. I think that this is really, as you're alluding to yourself, that this is not because all of a sudden a bunch of bureaucrats in the Department of Labor woke up one day and said, oh my gosh, there are some poor innocent people out there being taken advantage of, you know, we'll rush to the rescue here. I think it's because with perhaps the poor performance of the stock market in particular, people withdrawing money from these 401ks and 403bs and what have you, and some people on Wall Street complained about that, and now the government is changing things to make it harder for financial professionals to tell people to take their money out of these programs. Am I crazy? Am I paranoid?
You're right. I think you're right on it, Bob. I think that's really the big point of this whole thing. So they're trying to stop the run away from the ERISA plans that are so vested, you know, in the stock market, that they may be going into these individual retirement accounts, you know, sort of getting away from the stock market. So I think a lot of it really is that, is what I'm seeing as well. Now, they claim that they're not banning commissions and things of that sort, and they are saying that if you, you know, if you, because of the new ruling as a fiduciary, you're going to have to, you know, be very, very careful what you charge clients if you're going to be dealing in that retirement area, you know. And so what they're saying is that if you insist on earning commissions and things of that nature, that you're going to have to disclose that information. And this is the exemptions that they keep talking about. So they're wanting fiduciaries that will continue to earn commissions and have third-party, you know, payments coming in, that they're going to have to disclose what they're earning, you know, to whoever they're selling this product to, so that they can clearly see the kind of money they're making. Or they're just going to have to stay completely away from anything that looks like it's not working in the best interest of the public. And all these fiduciaries now are going to be held accountable, even to the individual investor. The investor now is, you know, probably has something to use to sue them on if necessary.
Yeah. Again, for those of our listeners who are fairly new and they might be perplexed by this, say, what? You guys are, you know, who could be against added disclosure requirements or more transparency for the final customer? You know, more information is always good, right? How could anyone? It's, you can't look at these things in a vacuum. That the U.S. federal government is certainly not a beacon of clarity and truth and integrity when it comes to financial shenanigans. Just to give one example, if I can find a good article I've written on this in the past, I'll put it on the show notes page. So remember, if you're hearing this is episode 14 of the Lara Murphy Show. So if you go to laramurphy.com and go to the podcast tab at the top, you'll see the archive. So right now you're listening to episode 14. But I'll put a link there if I can find it. Bernie Madoff, you know, the biggest private sector fraud in history up to this point. For years, there were private watchdog groups, and there was this one guy in particular who had been tipped off. You know, somebody sent him the returns or whatever, the prospectus from what Madoff's scheme to this guy, and he started looking at the numbers, and he concluded and said, this has to be a Ponzi scheme. There's no way he could possibly be earning these kind of returns given what he's saying his strategy is. And so this guy was writing to the SEC, I think it must have been the SEC, other relevant regulatory agencies, and telling them for years, you guys need to look into this Bernie Madoff guy. I think he's ripping people off. I think he's running a huge... And nope, they just totally ignored all that stuff because Madoff and his family were buddies with some of the key people in those organizations, those regulatory bodies. And so this idea that the way we should interpret the new Department of Labor ruling as they're just really trying to help consumers keep their finances in order and whatever, no, that's clearly not what's going on here. And I think we're giving hints as to what the actual explanation may be. But given that, I mean, there's nothing we can do right now to change what the Department of Labor is doing, although some in Congress are moving to overturn the ruling. The point is, what do you do as a financial professional? So, Carlos, can you just explain there? Because there's certainly people can in the abstract discuss financial matters, right? Is that, you know, there's exemptions and things. Can you talk a little bit about that and maybe what you think that people in the IBC practitioners program should do?
Well, first of all, I think before I go through the IBC practitioner, I should mention that in many ways, financial professionals right now are in a wait and see mode. And I say that because it's really the firms like the broker dealers, like the insurance companies, the financial institution itself has to go through the ruling and understand their new position, their new definition, and they have to say, okay, we are now being labeled as fiduciaries, and now they have to notify all of their advisors of this new definition that now they're coming under. And we just happen to be in a place right now where the ruling has just been officially put out. And so a lot of the financial institutions themselves are trying to figure out how to disseminate the new rulings and how their individual advisors are going to have to conduct themselves in communicating with the public. And also probably telling them, okay, since we sell financial products that have commissions, you know, they're commission-based, you're going to have to come under one of these exemptions and disclose to people that you sell these things to that there's commissions involved. So right now it is the firms, the financial institutions, that first have to say to themselves, okay, looks like this ruling covers now us as fiduciaries. Now we've got to decide how we're going to tell all of our advisors, you know, what their new position is, their new role is, and how they're going to be able to conduct themselves with the public. So it is sort of a wait and see situation. As I said, the ruling is not completely official until a year from now. So right now, I think we're in that period where the firms are trying to decide, how are we going to educate our individual advisors on their new status? Okay, so that's where we are, and I can sympathize with financial professionals of every stripe, because now here we go, another ruling that's going to limit things. Right now, when it comes to, you were asking about our own IBC practitioners. These are financial professionals too. And so does it involve them as well? Well, I think it does, because we have a lot of financial professionals that are part of our program. They graduated from our program that have the licenses, the required licenses, to speak to members of the public and in this arena and actually make recommendations. So it's going to cover them as well. But when we're talking about IBC, you know, we are talking about the utility of a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy. That's really what IBC is all about. It's not promoting a designated investment alternative to, you know, an ERISA type of plan or even an IRA. As you well know, Nelson himself says that IBC is not an investment. It's not about investments at all, of any kind. It's just the utility of the dividend-paying whole life insurance product. And the other thing to always remember is that in this arena, we're talking about tax-deferred, tax-preferred plans. And IBC is an after-tax system. So it makes no sense to put an after-tax, you know, product, if you will, inside of a tax-deferred program, a qualified program. It makes no sense at all. That would be ridiculous and impractical, and so it would be bad advice to start with. So yeah, IBC in itself is completely outside of that arena.
I mean, that's certainly true, but I guess we should probably clarify that, and this is in the training program. So again, if you're a financial professional and you're listening to the podcast, we want to, now a word from our sponsors, right? We do have a training program for financial professionals in all capacities, whether you're not just a life insurance person, but CPAs, what have you, anybody who talks to people about their money, we have a training program designed for you to explain Austrian economics and the infinite banking concept and how it might be integrated into your practice. And in that program, and this, you know, this came out years ago, we stressed that you have to be very careful and just play it safe, because FINRA also is concerned about this. And so especially if you're just someone with a life insurance license, You do not want to be meeting with a client and tell them, hey, why don't you go sell off some, you know, a chunk of your 401k or 403b and then use that money to buy a really big life insurance policy. You do not want to be talking like that because you're going to get into muddy waters very quickly. Instead, the client has to come to you and just say, this is how much I want to put in one of these policies. How do I do it? You agree with that, Carlos?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we basically say stay away from that kind of discussion altogether. And even our course itself, you know, followed the FINRA regulatory authority. I mean, we followed it right to the rule, and which coincidentally parallels the DOL ruling. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You don't even want to be having those discussions at all. So, again, if you're just an insurance licensed individual, like I said, there's some financial professionals in our program that have the licenses and are qualified, you know, to talk to people about this particular area of their retirement programs. But we think it's best just to stay away from that conversation altogether.
Yeah. People are allowed to pontificate, you know, so someone like, for example, Carlos and I, because we were concerned too. We looked and said, whoa, are we, you know, doing something wrong here? So we're guys on a podcast, or we're putting out the Laura Murphy Report, or with Nelson Nash, we do the IBC workshop, and there's specific language in the DOL ruling that exempts that type of behavior, you know, saying if you're just, you know, to a public audience, if you're sort of giving generic thoughts on financial matters, that's not what we're talking about. Instead, what we're, you know, we, the DOL in this ruling, what we're saying is people who are meeting one-on-one with clients and giving them specific advice that may turn around and benefit the person, you know, so that the person is acting in a fiduciary capacity and yet is not fully disclosing, you know, that's what they're targeting. So, you know, by all means, you're allowed to, you know, provide educational materials and stuff like that. But again, if you're a financial professional meeting with clients, you really want to familiarize yourself with this ruling and make sure that what you're doing is kosher, as they say. Okay, well, we are out of time for this particular episode. I guess, Carlos, I'll just give you an opportunity. Do you have any closing thoughts on this topic?
Well, I do want to mention that, you know, in the IBC workshop that we do to the general public, we're that's strictly educational, and a lot of our practitioners, actually host these events simply because we keep it on, you know, on an educational basis. And we do contrast IBC to other places where money can be stored, and that will include tax-qualified plans, but it's all done in an educational setting. You see, we don't ever rise to the level of recommendations, and that's really the point. As far as a closing remark, I'm going to go back to what you said earlier, that there's more behind this ruling, you know, that meets the eye. And I just makes me wonder, because, you know, in one of our podcasts here previously, we were talking about our national debt, now being at $20 trillion. And when I compare it to the fact that, first of all, a government really doesn't have any money, it can only take money that it extracts from us. And they need money right now, obviously. And then I look at the number in these retirement programs, which is almost about the same amount, $25 trillion. And so you wonder, oh my goodness, what is coming next? It just does make you wonder.
It certainly does. And for those who are just adrift in a sea of confusion and paranoia and uncertainty, thank goodness you have the Laura Murphy Show to guide you through these choppy waters. And I probably used 18 different metaphors there. Thanks, everyone. We are wrapping up this episode. As always, please share this podcast with those who might be interested. And we have a wealth of material. It's funny, somebody contacted me the other day and said, hey, I just discovered your podcast. This is great. Where do I go to read more about IBC? Well, you go to the website, folks. You go to laramurphy.com. So that's LARA-MURPHY.com. Okay. And you go there, we've got all kinds of stuff. The website is designed to be a crash course in both Austrian economics and IBC to get you up to speed depending on your level of interest. There's different layers, if you will, to say how far do you want to take it. And then there's links to external sites for further reading. So for learning more, please go to laramurphy.com, where we've got all the basics for you laid out there. And we will see you next time. Thanks, everyone.
You've just finished another episode of The Laura Murphy Show. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues to do your part in building the 10%.
The Laura Murphy Show is provided with the understanding that the staff and contributors of LauraMurphy.com are not herein engaged in rendering legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult your own professional tax, legal, or financial advisor.